Hello, and welcome to the Mosaic Portland podcast. Mosaic exists to follow Jesus in authentic community for the world. We come together on Sunday as one church in two locations in Northeast Portland and North Portland. Come join us at one of our gatherings. For times, how to find us, and more information, visit our website at www.mosaicportland.org. We look forward to worshiping with you. Here's this week's talk.
Would you find a Bible and open it up to John chapter 11? If you don't have a Bible, there's some on the shelves on the side. If you want, if you've got a phone or some kind of a device that you can pull that up, find your way there. John chapter 11. As we send out these leaders in training to this year of growth and of ministry and of learning, another thing that we're doing that starts today is a new teaching series that we're calling Beautiful. And if you were here last week, I just want to be really clear that we're calling this beautiful not because we've taken a long, hard look at ourselves and been like, man, we look good. That's not it at all. It's actually as we've looked deeply and closely and listened to who Jesus is, we found him to be really beautiful and fantastic, and we actually want to become more like Jesus. And so it's a time for us to look at Jesus. But in this new series, I want to do two things today. Let's call it three things. I want to just really quickly introduce to you two things that this series is about. This series is about two things, and I want you to hear that clearly today. And then the third thing I want us to do is to ask and answer a question that I think is vital for us to ask and answer together. So two things that this series is about, and then one question that we'll close with. But I want to start with a story first. It's a story that involves Jesus, but it's a story about three siblings, two sisters and a brother. This story has two sisters, Mary and Martha, and then a brother named Lazarus. And maybe you're familiar with the story if you heard that name Lazarus before, but in John chapter 11, we find this story of Lazarus and his two sisters. And Lazarus has gotten sick, and Mary and Martha, his two sisters, call for Jesus. They send out a message to Jesus, and they said, hey, the one that you love, your friend, Lazarus, he's fallen ill, he's sick. Would you come and do what it is that you do, Jesus, when you show up? Would you heal him and make him better? And Jesus doesn't come right away, and Lazarus gets sicker, and then he dies. And they bury him. And where we're going to pick up the story is where Jesus finally arrives to the home. Or close to the home. He's getting close to Mary and Martha's home, and Lazarus has been buried. He's actually been buried for 4 days already, but we're going to pick up the story in verse 17 where Jesus shows up. It says this, on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for four days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them and the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Most of us, when we hear stories or read stories, we begin to put ourselves into the story a little bit. For many of us, as we read this story, we hear these words from Martha, where she runs out to Jesus. So she kind of runs out, you know, down from the village a little bit and sees Jesus and comes up to Jesus and says, Jesus, if you were here, my brother wouldn't have died. And for many of us, we would say that in a way that says, gosh, darn it, why didn't you show up in time? Because you could have prevented this horrible thing that's happened. And that's actually not how she's saying it. She's not saying that. She's running up to Jesus, and she's mourning, and she's sad. Her brother has just died. Obviously, she's mourning. But she walks up to him, and it's more of a declaration. You're the kind of guy, you're the kind of person, you're unique, Jesus, that if you would have been here, you would have prevented this. I just know that that's who you are. So it's not a critique. She's not critiquing him. She's actually affirming who she believes he is. And so it's a compliment more than anything. And she follows it up with this. But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus, you're unique. There's nobody like you. And if you talk to God right now, you can actually ask that Lazarus will be raised from the dead. You can do that. Would you do that? And Jesus responds with, Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Jesus says to her, your brother will rise again. He says that to Martha. And what Martha hears is your brother's in a better place. Jesus says your brother will rise again, and Martha hears, kind of what some of us have maybe even said in that moment with a friend or a neighbor or a coworker that has lost a family member. And we say things that we truly mean, and we're trying to meet them in their time of pain. And we say they're in a better place. There's hope. Feel better. I want to encourage you. Don't be so sad. That's what Martha hears. And we know instinctively, and for those of us that have lost somebody close to us, we know that statements like that may be said with the best intentions, but they don't always help a lot. And that was Martha's experience, that Jesus says to her, "Your brother will rise again," and she hears he's in a better place. And her response explains that. She says, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." She says to Jesus, "I hear you saying he's in a better place, and I know that. I know that there's a time coming that's way down the road. It's not anywhere near. It's way down there. It's in the future. I don't know how many decades or centuries. It's way, way away that God is going to do something dramatic. God's going to show up and fix all that's messed up in this world. God's going to show up and save, and we'll all be raised again in the last day, whenever that will come. That's down the road." What she's saying to Jesus is, this doesn't make a lot of difference for me in the here and now. What she's saying to Jesus is, "Jesus, thanks for your comment, but that doesn't, I know that that's down there, but in the here and now, right now, in this situation, in my home, in my village, in my life this week, that doesn't mean a whole lot." And Jesus actually says, whoa, you're not getting what I'm saying. So he says this. This is an amazing statement he says here in verse 25. Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life." Let me explain what those mean, he says. "For the resurrection, the one who believes in me will live, even though they die. I'm the resurrection. If you believe in me, even when you die, you're still going to live. And what it means that I'm the life is this. And whoever lives right in the here and now, in this week, this day, whoever lives by believing in me will never die." So he says this dramatic statement. She doesn't quite comprehend all that he's saying. He says, "I am the resurrection. I am the life." And then he says, "Do you believe this? Do you believe this?" Think with me for a minute what that scene would have been like. They have this exchange, and it's kind of on a road slightly out of town, and they wrap up their conversation. They walk back to the house. It says that Bethany is less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and all these friends and family members and even these people who are professional, get this, professional mourners. They're paid to cry with you. It's kind of like maybe part of a role of a counselor today, but all of these people would have flooded the house, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus' home, and they probably all were wearing dark clothes. Most of them, not all of them, would have brought in cakes and stuff that they bought at, you know, Winco and Whole Foods and put it on the table, and some of them would have, you know, spent hours over a jello with some kind of fruit chopped up and put in it, and they would have placed that at the table, and then they would have sat on the couch and stood next to a doorway and cried and talked and listened and wailed and moaned, and the whole scene was colored with death. Death defined this moment for all of those people. And Jesus comes walking into town and walking into the house saying, "I'm the resurrection, I'm the life." And then asking, "Do you believe that?" In a scene, in a context, in a moment, post-funeral, post-memorial service, 4 days down the road, body is decaying in the grave. Everybody is focused on death. And Jesus walks in and says, "I am the resurrection, I am the life." He says, "You're all not seeing something. There's something here that you're all missing." And he shows up and he has this contrary, radically different message where he says, "I'm the life." He doesn't say, "I come to give life." He actually says, "I am life." That when you connect yourself to me, when you believe in me, when you trust me, you actually have a kind of life that you don't. There's a whole different scene that happens when Jesus shows up. death no longer defines everything around them. What happens when Jesus shows up is he changes everything. Their whole understanding of the future, their whole understanding of that moment was bounded by death. And the only hope that they have was somewhere way in the future that God would show up and do something dramatic and bring hope and life into it. And what happens is Jesus shows up in that moment and he changes everything. He says, it's not way down there. It's actually in the here and now. If you know this story, you may know what comes in the next few verses. Martha says this. She says to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, that you are the Son of God, who is to come into the world. I don't understand all of what that means, but I get what you're saying. I get part of it. I don't get all of it. You're a different kind of guy. You're unique. There's no one like you. I understand that. I don't understand all of what you're saying when you say the resurrection and life, but I believe. I want to believe more. What's interesting is Jesus is saying this, and then he spends the next several hours mourning with them, meeting them exactly where they are, crying with them. It says Jesus wept, the shortest verse. If you've never memorized any verses, start with this one. It's two words, Jesus wept. He says, I'm here with you in the here and now, not way down in the future, but I'm here with you. I am life here. I understand what you're experiencing. I'm going to meet you in it. And the body's still in the grave. Lazarus is still dead. And it's 16 verses later in verse 43. He prays. He stands outside of the grave. Everybody's watching. He prays to his father. And then he says this in verse 43. When he had said this, that prayer, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth wrapped around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Crazy scene. Jesus just raises Lazarus from the dead. Maybe you've heard that story before. Maybe you've never heard it. But Jesus is claiming to be the life before raising the dead body. He says, there's hope in the here and now that you're not seeing if you think death is the most powerful thing in the world. And then he walks out sometime later, some hours later, after crying with them and weeping with them and eating some really weird jello and just mourning with them. Then he walks outside and then he raises Lazarus from the dead. And Lazarus comes out smelling because he's been decaying for 4 days and he's wrapped up and they unwrap him. And I don't know exactly how that worked, like how tightly they wrapped him or if they happened to wrap Lazarus independently so he could walk out of the grave. I don't know exactly how that happened, but he walks out of the grave and they unwrap him. And Lazarus says, hey, thanks so much, bro. And he's alive. And you've got this scene where Jesus says, I'm the life and I'm claiming to be the life, and then I'm going to demonstrate that I'm the life as well. Jesus changes everything. This series that we're starting today is about two things. The first thing it is about Jesus. Jesus is the one who determines how we view life. You may not be sitting at home mourning right now, but many of us actually live in a world that is defined by death in one way or another. That we live in a world where more and more parts of our lives are actually separated from Jesus. Where the statement, I am the resurrection, I am life, doesn't define our lives. It's a thought that's out there on the road. It's not in the here and now. Or maybe it's something that's going to impact us way down in the future, but it's not in the here and now. And the reality is that Jesus is here, that Jesus is present, and he changes everything. He brings in life and hope and peace and grace in ways that we can't find in anywhere else in life. And rather than living a life that is separated from Jesus, we want to walk through these next several weeks and find out more of who Jesus is so that he can define more of our life as individuals, our life as a church, even our life as a city, what that means. There are far too many that live in this world today that are defined by death. And Jesus is unique and says, I am life, and separated from me is not life, is death. And so the first thing that this series is about is about Jesus. We want to look at Jesus and see him more clearly. We want to look at Jesus and understand more of who he is. There's seven statements throughout the book of John. This is one of them. But there's seven other statements where he says, I am. And then he finishes a sentence. I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the way, the truth, and the life. There's seven of those. And we want to look at those as we walk through these weeks and find out more of who Jesus is. Because the second thing that this series is about is it's about us. It's about us. And we want to look at Jesus to find out who we are to be. as we understand more of who Jesus is and we have a vision for who Jesus is and what he wants to do in this world, we're going to understand who we are to be. I want you to take a look at a statement. It's a quote from a book that I think is a fantastic book. It's a short book, but it's by a guy named James Brownson. It's actually four other authors together. I just didn't want to write all their names out there. But it's four people together writing this, and they're saying something about when we look at Jesus and see who he is. At stake in the vision of Jesus that we follow is nothing less than the church's our identity, the church's reason for existing at all. The church exists to participate in God's redemptive work in the world. If you're a follower of Jesus, you're part of the church. You might not like that, but that's how he designed it. You're part of the church. And what it means to be a part of a church is that the church exists to participate in God's redemptive work in the world. This work takes as its focus, this might shock you, the church's work in the world takes as its focus not our wants and desires, but it takes as its focus the way of life, the suffering and triumph of Jesus. That we would look at Jesus and see his way of life, his way of being, who he is, what his character is, how he lived, and that would then shape us. That Jesus actually shapes who we are. That we want to be the kind of people, that we want to be the kind of church family that says, yeah, look at Jesus, and hopefully we're more and more emulating who he is, that we're looking more and more like him. And so as we take this reality seriously, that we want to be a part of what God's doing in the world, and in order to do that, we want to take on the way of life of Jesus. We've come to five words that we think begin to help us see, that begin to help us see who it is that God's calling us to be, the kind of people that he wants us to be. And so I want to introduce these five words to you, and then we'll walk through them over the coming weeks. But they're five words that begin to shape who we are as we look at Jesus. And here's the first word. It's broken. And if you've been around Mosaic any amount of time and you listen, you know that this is a regular part of our language, that we talk about ourselves as broken, not because we're proud to be that, but because we believe that we have an assessment of where we are and that we are actually humans that are in need of a Savior. And we actually want to celebrate that because we've come in contact with Jesus and we feel safe to be able to say, Jesus, I need you. I can't do this on my own. And so we don't want to stay broken. We want to be healed and restored in so many different ways. But we identify and we actually celebrate. Yeah, God, we're broken, and that's safe to be because we know who you are. And so we actually want to celebrate that we're a broken people. It's where we get our very name. Obviously, the concept of a mosaic is taking broken pieces, whether it be of clay or rock or glass or tile, and it's assembled in a certain way. And we believe that God's actually healing us and restoring us and putting us together so that we're actually beautiful, not in and of ourselves, but because of what he's doing in us. And so broken is the first word. The second one is the word apprenticing. As we look at Jesus, Jesus regularly led others to follow in his way. We want to be learners who are leading other learners, that we can say, hey, we're still growing, that we're broken, but God's doing something in us and we want to turn and pass that down to the next generation, those that are following us. So we want to constantly be apprenticing in every way that we can. We want to be a people that's constantly looking at Jesus and looking back at who's fallen behind us and helping them to become more like him. The third word is generous. As we look at the life and story of who Jesus is and what he's done, that he gave everything for us. And we actually want to be that kind of people. We want to be that kind of people that as we look at Jesus, we allow him to shape us and say, help us to be able to give more away. That we, as we just brought up leaders, that we said, we want to invest in leaders significantly, sacrifice for them, and then send them out. That we want to be a kind of people, a kind of church family that is giving more and more and holding on to less and less. And that is a high calling, and it's challenging, and it's sacrificial. But we want to be a generous people. The fourth word is safe. As Jesus shapes us, we actually will become more and more distinct in this world. Many of you feel this. You are seeking to follow Jesus. You want to follow Jesus. You want to hear from him. You want to know him. And you live in this tension where the more that you follow Jesus, the less of a fit you find in this world, that you feel a tension of, I want to follow Jesus, but that means I'm going to look less and less like my coworkers. I want to follow Jesus, but gosh, that puts me at odds with some of my neighbors in ways that I'm really uncomfortable with. And in the midst of that tension, we want to be distinct and safe. We want to be the kind of people that balance grace and truth together. And in that is this unique place in the world where everyone is safe. Hear this, not comfortable, but safe. That we can balance grace and truth. That we can live out a story called the gospel. That the good news that in the midst of our brokenness, that we're still forgiven and loved. And by being that kind of people, we actually will be a safe place for anyone. That's a dream, but we want to be that. The last word is this, and this might be the one that we as a particular community at this moment in history have the most growing to do. We want to be joyful. We want to be joyful. And maybe I'm just projecting a little bit of where I'm at onto you, and if I'm doing that, I'm going to work to not do that. But I know I need to work at being more joyful. I think we need to work as a community at being more joyful, that we actually celebrate this deep confidence that we have that Jesus is alive and at work in the here and now. And so regardless of our circumstances, our happenings, things that affect our happiness, regardless of that, we actually can have this unconquerable hope, this confidence in who Jesus is, and we can celebrate that on a regular basis, regardless of our circumstances, our happenings, that we want to celebrate. We want to be a joyful people consistently. This is a list of 5 words. It's not meant to be exhaustive, but it's as we look at Jesus in this season of being Mosaic, that these are 5 things that we want to set who we want ourselves to become and be. And as we pursue this, God's going to do a lot of things through us. There is a whole list of things that we believe that God's calling us to. And I could rattle those off, and I can list those off, and I could talk about those. But more importantly than what God is calling us to do is who he's calling us to be. And so we want to focus on these things because we see these in Jesus, and we believe that he's calling us to be this. This series is about Jesus, and secondly, this series is about us. The question is this: why are we doing this now? Why right now? Why in 2015 in September, as we start the fall, are we talking about how we see ourselves in the future? There's a few reasons for that. One is that much of the vision that God gave to Mosaic as it was formed a dozen years ago, we've seen a lot of those things come into reality. That Jesus has worked in dramatic ways in and through the life of this church. And there is so much to celebrate. And a lot of it's been accomplished. And so as we look at that initial list of things and the dreams and the things that Mosaic has asked God for over the years, we've seen a lot of that come into fruition. And we want to celebrate that it's been accomplished, or that those things are ongoing right now. And so we need new vision for the next season in the life of Mosaic. The second thing is this, that our city has changed in the last dozen years. Our city is different than it was a dozen years ago. And so God's calling us to new things in this city. When Mosaic was planted 12 years ago, there was this what's called a donut effect in our city. And maybe you haven't heard this before, but if you look at the urban core of Portland 12 years ago, there were very, very few churches that were seeking to follow Jesus and take scripture seriously. 12 years ago, in the urban core of Portland, there just weren't very many churches like that. And so Mosaic began with a vision to be that kind of a church. There's a donut effect around in the suburban outside of Portland, the suburban part of our city where there's a lot of churches. 12 years later, there's a lot more churches in the urban core, and that's a great thing. But there's another reality that goes along with that, that as the urban core of our city has changed in terms of the number of churches, there are also more people who don't know Jesus. Our city is growing. More and more people are moving into Portland. I don't know if you knew that, but the reason that your house value is going up and the reason that the cost of rent is going up is because people want to move here. And no longer it's just people that want to work 12 hours a week. It's actually people that are educated and have full-time jobs. Our city is changing. It is popular and it is in demand. And so we need to be a different kind of church that adjusts to that and has a dream for reaching more people in our city. And so as there's more churches in the urban core, there's also more people that don't know Jesus. Our city is becoming more and more post-Christian, which means it's taking on more of the characteristics of Western Europe. It's it's moving further away from Jesus. And so we want to be a kind of church that calls people back to Jesus. And again, I said this a few weeks ago, but our city has again become, has been noted for being the least religious city in all of the U.S. Over 40% of the people in our city refuse to identify of any kind of faith. So our city is changing. The third reason is that without vision, people die. We see that in Scripture. We hear that in Scripture. What it means is that we're always going in a direction. And if we're not clearly hearing from Jesus about where to go, we'll find our own way, and those lead to death. Without vision, without seeing clearly where God is calling us to go, who God is calling us to be, we end up on a wrong path. And the last reason is this. And this is probably the most important one. But we believe that we've heard from Jesus. We believe that God is calling us to something new. Not something different, but a fuller expression of who we've always been designed to be. And we need to hear that. We need to understand it. We need to choose if that's what we want to be a part of or not, and go where God's calling us. And that means that God's going to grow us and change us and make us into a new kind of people. So that's why now. I want to invite you to these next, I think it's 10 weeks. We're going to walk through these words over the next 10 weeks, and then we're going to celebrate with a joyful celebration on the Sunday before Thanksgiving. And we're going to see people baptized, and we're going to celebrate where God's calling us to go. And so I want to invite you to these next 10 weeks as we look closer and closer at who Jesus is and who he's calling us to be and where he's calling Mosaic into the future. We're going to continue to sing and to worship now. And I want to invite you to these tables. And this is another way for us to be shaped by Jesus, but to see him and to see his beauty, that he actually laid down his life in order to invite us to life. And so if you're a follower of Jesus, if you want to follow Jesus today, I want to invite you to these tables. There's two upstairs and there's three down here. Our leaders in training and the spiritual mentors are going to be at these tables, and they're going to hold a plate of bread and a cup of juice. And you can take a piece of the bread that represents Christ's body broken and dip it in the juice that represents his blood shed for us. Be reminded again of who he is, how he lived, and what he's done for us. So I'm going to pray, and we're going to continue to sing and take communion together. Jesus, we need you. We cannot make life happen on our own, and when we do, we end up with some form and some experience of death. And we need and want life, and that comes only from you. And so we come to you today, this morning. We come to your table, and we want to see you face to face. We want to experience you. We want to walk with you in this life. We thank you for your sacrifice. We thank you for laying down your life for us.